Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by GoToMeeting. I love GoToMeeting, and if you aren't using it, you need to try it. If you're not using a web conferencing tool or a service that you use is kind of, well, herky-jerky and a little clunky, use my first choice, which is GoToMeeting. Easy to use, secure, affordable. You really just get that wonderful opportunity to work in a virtualized state in no time at all. Easy to set up, easy to tell people how to use, and with voice over IP included, you can call in via the phone or your computer. Simply try GoToMeeting at GoToMeeting.com/podcast. You get a 30-day free trial on that. And what's great about it is it's about a $49 value. You can do all the things that you want to do. Check it out. Run it through the tests. And I really encourage you to do so. Go to GoToMeeting.com/podcast. And this episode is also sponsored by Audible.com. With over 75,000 books to choose from to download at your convenience and a free offer coming in this episode, why not check it out? audiblepodcast.com/investor. And with our new special sponsor, Matrix Direct, where you can save up to 75% or more on term life insurance. Got to check it out over at matrixdirect.com/TDI. Well, howdy do and welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 166. It is the end of June 2010, or getting to the end of June 2010. The Lakers just beat Boston. I hope that if you're a Laker fan, you're happy. A Boston fan, you should be happy. You played really well, but what an unbelievable game, wasn't it? Boy. Not a sports show. This is a finance show, so we're going to talk about a lot of things today. We're going to talk to our good friend and a guest, Charles Kirk, internet mentor, blogger, and trader. We're going to also have, in the next few weeks, I mentioned coming up, Kate Stalter from Investors Business Daily, Tim Seymour, you've seen him on Fast Money, and many more. And lots to talk about today before we get to our guest and to go through some of the gyrations of the week and what's going on and maybe a little bit of an outlook as to where we're going. Got a lot of questions that came in about gold recently. We saw gold hit an all-time high again at the end of the week. Actually, almost daily we saw that. And I have a little, I have a little concern about what is driving gold right now. We did have a short position, a very small short position, on the gold miners that we were looking to potentially increase. And right now it looks like we're kind of at the top end of where we're going to, you know, stop that out. The gold miners have been moving, of course, in tandem with the gold, with the price of gold, towards the end of this week. Last week, it wasn't the case. In fact, last week it hardly moved at all, and we thought that that was going to be a good play because gold had a top end. Right now the question is, what's moving gold and what is the top end? So if you think about it for a second, gold has moved dramatically over the last couple of weeks in particular, and it really started back when we saw a lot of the European issues arise and get much more into the news and the concern about the sovereign quality of the European debt, as well as the long-term stability of the euro, the single currency euro, was going to hold. When that started to fade and there was some question about that, a lot of people said that they want to move into gold. But, you know, that makes sense. The fear trade, the concern trade, maybe even the inflation trade, that all makes sense when it comes to gold. What I don't understand, and I didn't understand, was the recent headlines that I saw when they said that the gold trade, or what people were running into gold, was because they were concerned that the European area, due to the austerity programs and the other things that are going on, are actually going to be concerning to investors, and therefore they're opting for gold. That would mean a deflationary environment. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that in a deflationary environment, you want to own any metal. In an inflationary market where they're printing money, where money is obviously worth less, hard assets make a lot of sense, whether it's gold or whether it's silver, whatever it is. But why own gold if we're concerned about the growth in overall economies? You're much better off pulling your money out, maybe putting it into bonds, maybe, you know, being more safe until you see things turn around. So I think that you have to be careful what the reasons are right now. And it looks to me like this gold rush, this movement into gold, is much more about the fear of currency than anything else. We do not see inflation in the United States. We saw the CPI number this week. We saw the PPI number this week. There was no inflation there, was there? There was nothing. There was no inflation. This is being confirmed by Bernanke. I mean, listen, you can look at the numbers. You can rip them apart any way you want. I cannot find a shred of information that shows me that there's any inflation out there at all. Now, there is an incredible amount of money that has been printed through the quantitative easing process. No kidding. Absolutely. No argument from me. But at the same time, I don't see where we're seeing any kind of significant levels of inflation in the situation, in the economy, in the numbers right now. Will it come? Yeah, probably. Sometime in the future. But I don't think that gold right now is being bought with that in mind. It seems like a fear trade over the sovereign debt. It seems much more as just something everybody believes that they should have because it is moving up right now. And call me a naysayer, but it looks like it is overbought right now from a lot of different situations and a lot of different indicators. And for right now, we're staying away. We sold our gold about 3.5%, 4% ago. We rode it up from about 850 to where it is about now. And, you know, we're okay with that. We're just taking it off the table and taking our nice profits off the table. The other thing I want to talk about, a lot of things I want to talk about. I was talking to Frank Curzio the other day, and we were talking about, you know, a lot of people have been calling him and asking him, hey, Frank, do you think it's a good time to buy Google? Now, I want you to think about that. Google has been just really doing nothing of late. After the last earnings came in, we saw the stock sell off dramatically. There has been really no sexiness to the stock of late. You know, they have a lot of very inexpensive, if no cost, items. Of course, Google Docs and Google Calendar and Gmail, et cetera, et cetera. And they make the money from advertising. And yes, they did buy that mini mobile advertising platform recently. And they got approval for it to put it on their Android system. And Android phones are selling like hotcakes. But at the same time, the actual the design, the infrastructure, and the, I guess, the business model, more appropriately, when it comes to the Android system on phones, is very much like the Windows system on phones. Now, with one significant difference. Windows was built for a PC, and then it was retrofitted, rebuilt, and retooled for a mobile device. That never worked. This didn't work well. The Android system was built initially for mobile devices. And that being the case, it was much better suited, and that's why it's getting a lot better reviews and why it's being installed on a much greater base right now. The problem, though, is that Apple is still the most desirous phone. We'll put that aside. Forget about the iPad and anything else. But the iPhone is the most desirous phone on the market right now because it is mature for what it is. It has a tremendous amount of stability. The App Store is quite complete, although a lot of things are being added to it all the time. The negative is clearly a lot of people don't like AT&T. Now, if you live in New York and some metropolitan areas, AT&T is the worst carrier you'll find. I've been in New York, and I can't get a signal in Manhattan on AT&T. Down in Florida, California, throughout the rest of a lot of the area on the East Coast, I don't have a problem. But some people can't stand it, would much prefer to get Verizon. But if you look at what's going on and the difference, the absolute blowout when it comes to Apple, now trading at an all-time high at the end of the week. When the pre-orders happened last week for Apple, I don't know if you saw the story, but when the pre-orders happened for Apple last week, it actually knocked down the site of AT&T. Over 10 times the pre-orders versus the 3G for the new iPhone 4. 600,000 were sold or pre-ordered in a single day. In Japan, did you see these images? In Japan, there were lines all around the block. And that's what's causing Apple stock to be at an all-time high. And what's amazing is the projections that you see on many, many different screens of what the price is. We see that the average price is probably about $320 per share. Now it's trading, what, about $275, $274? And what you see is that the projections across the board from about 40 different analysts are averaging in the low 300s. Why? Well, as Apple continues to dominate the area, you can see some of the peripheral situations falling aside. For example, last week, Nokia came out with a warning. They came out with a warning, and their stock tumbled. Research in Motion is just nowhere to be found. Google is just, you know, kind of lackluster. And right now, the big play right now is clearly, when you look at smartphones, the iPhone. Now, the iPad is also selling extremely well, and we've become very bullish on Apple since it was about 235. We originally picked it up at about 235. When it came all the way back down. We were waiting for a pullback. We waited. We missed it a couple of times. Finally picked it up and have a nice profit on that. But I got to tell you something. Apple looks to be solid from here unless something bizarre happens, unless a lot of things change. But even in an economy around the world where people are looking to spend less, and you could see that in some areas by the stores. Like, for example, we have purchases in and we own Ross Stores and we own TJ Maxx. These are discount retailers, and we like those in this environment. But Apple continues to refresh product lines and to come out with probably some of the best tools for communication and for mobile computing that you can find anywhere. So hats off to Apple. And I also want to talk to you about, there's two other things I want to talk to you about, but I want to talk to you about the bank stress tests that are going on and about to go on in Europe. You know, we're seeing that in Europe, we're going to have these stress tests that are going to be, I guess, very similar to that. But we're going to talk about that in 1 second, and then we'll get back to that. Because, you know, I want to talk to you about Matrix Direct just for a second. So this is kind of interesting. This is a great sponsor. I want you to listen to this because you know how important life insurance is, and it helps provide a safety net for your loved ones, and I guess really should probably be an essential part of everyone's financial plan. But a lot of people put it off because, well, it's kind of complicated, and who wants to deal with life insurance? Or maybe, I don't know, it's too expensive. But you know what? It doesn't have to be. And I've discovered coverage through Matrix Direct that can save you up to 75% or even more on term life insurance. And you're not going to have to, you know, jump through a lot of hoops to get set up. The licensed insurance agents at Matrix Direct really help manage the process from start to finish. So really, you don't have to. Plus, when you buy life insurance, you don't have to settle for, you don't want to settle for. Just a one-size-fits-all, what everybody gets. You want it to be customized. So you can get a great range of flexible plans, and they make it easy for you. You know, Matrix Direct has helped over 4 million people with their life insurance needs, and they can really help you too. Just go to matrixdirect.com/TDI for straightforward information and a free quote, an absolutely free quote. Really, that's no reason to think of anything other than this, but to, if you're looking for life insurance and you're considering it, or if you just want to get a quote, go right to matrixdirect.com/TDI. Now, policies are issued by American General Life Insurance Company in Houston, Texas, and they're not available in all states. For details about this paid advertisement, please visit Matrix Direct online at matrixdirect.com/TDI. Good sponsor, something that I think that is going to be, I think a lot of people will like that because they're always looking for, you know, bargains and where to look for things to find some benefit. So what's going on? I have this theory. I have a couple different theories out there. One is about the bank stress test that we're going to see in the Eurozone. Now, I don't know if you've been watching what's going on there, but if you haven't, you know there's some concern. Well, what's the one way to alleviate concern? What do we always say? Markets hate confusion, uncertainty, and when there's uncertainty out there, people just back away. Well, people backed away from the banks and the markets of the Eurozone for the last number of weeks. They started to come back recently. But what is happening now? Well, it looks like they took a play right out of our playbook. And if you think about it for a second, how did he think about this? Well, isn't it interesting that, you know, Secretary Geithner went over and had a little chat with the gang. And within about 2 weeks, they're saying, you know what? We're going to have these stress tests on the banks, and Spain will be the first one to put it out. Now, here they did more of a unified, I guess, exposure leak, really, is what happened. But they at the same time, they put these numbers out when the stress tests happened, within a very short period of time of each other, within a day or two. What's going to happen in Europe is that you're going to see each individual entity, whether it's Spain or Italy or Germany, they're going to put it out in their own speed. Clearly, Spain is one of the first that's coming out. Now, you got to think for a second. If Spain is going to be putting theirs out first, they must have pretty good confidence that they're going to be met with approval by the markets. Or why would they do so? On top of the fact that they recently did a pretty good bond deal that sold out and had a good bid to cover, good demand, we'll call it. But at the same time, if we recall what happened here was that our Fed said that if any bank was unable to meet the criteria of the stress test and fell short with their capital ratios, that what we're going to do is we're going to actually go in and we're going to help them. Well, that's not the job of the EU. There's a difference. That's the job of the individual countries. So now what we're going to find is that, for example, Spain, let's take them first. They're going to come out with their numbers. Now, does anybody think for a second, do you think for a second that those numbers are going to look bad? Or are they going to be pretty darn close to the required number? I mean, Geithner knows the deal. He knows the playbook. If you recall what happened, that was the final straw after the bank started coming up again from the depths of the absolute bottom of the pits. They started coming up, and when the stress test came out and we realized that everybody could handle, or at least the stress test showed that the banks were in good shape, whether they were or not, the stress test showed this, it put the green light up and the thumbs up for money managers to actually go out and buy these stocks. Because now they have almost the approval of the government that said these banks are not only solvent, they're solid. So what's going to happen now is I very well believe that we are going to see a flurry of good numbers come out, and if they're not good, we're going to see private offerings and a quick return to the capital ratios that they need to have in order to qualify. There is nothing like a run on the bank if you see a bad number. They are going to have this set up prior. They are going to know that they can fund their required balance if they do miss. And just to get back just for a moment to the Spanish debt offering that we saw that was really so good, which actually provided a nice reprieve for the markets this week, and it allowed Spain to do very, very well this week, which you wouldn't expect. But what you saw was that there is support, just like we did it here, that if there was a soft bond issuance, there's plenty of invisible hands behind the scene going to push that up to create the demand to at least show the audience that's looking that, you know what, this is something that is viable. For example, you may have seen this before. You ever walk along a street in a busy city and they have those stores that they have all those old and antique-like lighting and desks and statues and all sorts of different things, you know, 50% off or 75% off, going out of business. And they may have a barker standing there bring you in, and oftentimes they have these auctions. And they have, you know, 8 or 10 people sitting at the auction. These are planted so that it looks like there's actually something going on. It's like anything else, you know, you want the audience to be the external audience to look in and say, hey, what's so interesting about what's going on over there? And if everybody else approves of this, well, you know what? The herd mentality says, I approve of it too. If everybody else is doing it, how bad can it be? So what we're seeing right now is that they're instilling confidence slowly but surely, and I would bet dollars to donuts that the stress tests are going to be not so stressful when it comes to these banks over in the Eurozone, because they can't afford to have any more problems. Already the Euro itself has been propping up very, very nicely from a low. We see it at the highest it's been in weeks, and it has one of the best runs this week than it had in months on end. So is there just a short cover coming in here, or is there a change of temperament, a change of investment appetite when it comes to the Eurozone? Don't forget that the Euro trade, the short Euro trade, whether you're short the Euro and long the dollar, whether you're short the Euro and long the Australian dollar, or any combination, you know, Euro and Yen, whatever the combination is, it's a very crowded trade right now. And there's a lot of people who are short in a big way that trade, whether it's a carry trade or it's a simple currency transaction, cross trade. That being the case, those are the ones that are going to be flushed out dramatically. And anytime you see a trade that's so crowded as it is, especially on the short side, is where you can get a quick short covering and a real bounce in the markets. And as our markets are working almost in lockstep to the movement of the euro, if you've ever noticed that on a tick, you'll notice that the lower dollar right now is going to be beneficial overall to the U.S. economy and to exports especially. I want to finish up on one other point, and then we'll get to our guest, but I want to talk about some of the numbers that came out last week. We saw a very disappointing number when it came to retail sales a couple of weeks ago, but we discussed, and we had it on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, the retail sales weren't as bad as they looked. The headline number was bad, but if you dug beneath, really the building and construction brought it down dramatically. The stores and a few other areas were doing pretty well comparatively. We saw the Philly Fed number come out this week, which was pretty abysmal. We saw the Empire State that was questionable. And more importantly, they both showed growth and continuing expansion, but they were below where they were expected to be. We also saw the leading indicators come out. Now, the leading indicators missed by 0.1% versus expectations. But again, we put this up on our website. If you look at these, they're not so bad. I'm not trying to be just totally Mr. Optimistic here, but if you had to look past the headlines, because the headlines were kind of odd this week, it was almost opposite of what we usually see. We're usually seeing a very optimistic headline. You got to look beneath the numbers and say, oh, that's not that. But this week we saw, for the most part, very pessimistic headlines and actually data that wasn't so bad underlying it. In addition to that, we saw a number that I will agree was pretty bad, which was the initial claims. And the question is, why are we seeing such high initial claims at above 470? Well, one of the reasons is that probably we're seeing a lot of the layoffs from the Gulf region, which is laying off people right and left. On the other hand, though, there's a lot more people being involved in the cleanup right now. So we have this kind of battling situation where we have a lot of layoffs that are going on. But in my opinion, it's because we're seeing that earnings season is coming and companies are doing everything they can to keep the earnings numbers really sharp right now. I think it's a very important issue that's going on right now. So when we look at the overall, you know, the overall situation when it comes to employment, it's still a humongous problem. You can't get an economy moving at the level we need to get it moving if you don't have full employment. And finally, the other number that was brought up this week, and the other number that I think is important to take a look at, is when we look at the earnings that came in from, for example, FedEx and Best Buy. Did you notice those numbers? Those numbers were the FedEx number came in okay, but their projections for the rest of the year were a little bit soft, concerned about the European zone and the outlook. But Best Buy missed by 13 or 14 cents. I mean, their numbers on EPS was awful. Their TV numbers were down, almost opposite of what's going on in England, where they had tremendous TV sales for the soccer tournaments, obviously. And what we're seeing now is a situation where there is a slowdown, it looks like, and we have to see if it's more than just a one-off. Is Best Buy a bit of an outlier right now because everybody stocked up on what they had and now concerned throughout May and got more reserve, but yet we saw the consumer confidence number come out looking good. So we are in a very strange situation right now where I think there's a lot more concern out there. And until we see a break in some of the numbers, it's probably going to stay. Well, let's take a quick break and talk to you about Audible.com. You know, they're the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across just all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. And, you know, for listeners of this podcast, I was thinking, you know, first of all, they're offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to really just try the service. And one of the best New York Times bestsellers that you may want to think about is by a gentleman named David Walker, Come Back America, Turning the Country Around and Restoring Fiscal Responsibility. David Walker's he's the former head of the GAO, and he shows how our country can turn to fiscal responsibility and kind of get back there, control spending and saving on Social Security and Medicare and simplifying the tax code. Right. But it's there. It's there. So you need to go to get this is free again. You just go there or get any other book of your choice at audiblepodcast.com/investor. That's audiblepodcast.com/investor. I would really check this out. It's a free book and there's really no risk there. Great stuff. 75,000 choices. If you don't like this, you got 74,999. Go check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. When we get back, we're going to bring in our guest when we get him all plugged in. And that's Charles Kirk from the Kirk Report. So thanks for listening. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. All right, we're back with our special guest today. You know, we got him all plugged in. We can get this telephone onto the podcast thing going on with Charles Kirk from the Kirk Report. And, you know, this I'll tell you something. I have been emailing back and forth. I consider myself a pen pal of Charles Kirk here. And, you know, because we've been going back and forth for a long time. And one of the things that I know that he likes from his website and some of our discussions is screening and all that. But we're going to get into that in a second. So, Charles, how are you, buddy?
Good. How are you, Andrew? And thank you for being so persistent and wanting to do an interview. I appreciate it.
Oh, hey, it's my pleasure. You do some great work, really, some great work. We'll give people where they can go to check it out soon. But, you know, give me a little bit of background. I know that you started out investing a number of years ago for yourself, and yet you kind of, I think, a lot of self-taught where you've, you know, tried to absorb as much information as you can. And one of the, you know, you like a lot of different strategies. You've learned from a lot of different ways of doing things, and you have some very specific strategies. So kind of just give me just a couple of minute background on where you came from and how you are where you're at this point.
Well, looking back, I became interested in the market because of sort of being forced to. My wife and I started working out of college and knew nothing about mutual funds, and I hate putting my money on something I don't have any understanding about, so I decided to learn a little bit, and that kind of grew and grew and grew and became more interested in the market, became quite dissatisfied with mutual funds at the time. My wife's a teacher, and she had accounts at TIA Cref, and you may be familiar with that.
Yep.
And we were not happy with the performance we were getting, and we felt we could do better, and it just grew from there.
So, you know, at this point, you're actually mentoring others. I mean, it didn't just grow from there. It became a passion of yours, something
Absolutely.
That you know, do all the time. And actually, you have a lot of people that, tremendous following, that follow you and a lot of the things, you know. And you were gracious enough to give me a, you know, a free look, if you will, at your website and all the different things that you do. You know, you're reporting on kind of what's coming up, what's going on. You're kind of a little news source of your own mixed in with some of your own thoughts on the day, as well as what's nice, a little bit of levity, a little bit of off-topic discussions. But one of the things I know that you do like is the process of finding stocks. And how do you find your investments? What's the big tool that you use, and how do you make it to the point that, okay, I'm looking for something, I found something, and now I'm going to invest in it? You know, give me that kind of breakdown.
Well, it all starts, at least for me, with stock screens. I mean, I run quite a few. I do them on different types of things, primarily on fundamentals, but I also screen for technicals as well. And it really depends on kind of what I'm looking for at the particular time and what the market likes. And in fact, the reason why I probably do so many things, like you mentioned, Andrew, is that it's probably because over the years that I've been doing this, I've done a lot of things wrong. And so it's you learn, I think, the best way in the market by finding your own path and figuring out what works for you and what doesn't work. And as you probably know, it's the market isn't very consistent in that sense. You know, there are certain things that the market does appreciate, but the way that it views itself and the way investors view stocks in particular can vary quite a bit. You know, it's more of a popularity contest. I think people have referred to it as being, you want to kind of know what's going to be in favor in the future, not what already is. And so different screenings help me do that, particularly hone in on opportunities beyond what you find in the newspaper or online. It essentially allows me to narrow down a watch list of focus groups that I can then either trade or invest from.
You know, I was thinking about that recently, and wouldn't it be kind of interesting, because I have this theory that it's kind of like a Peter Lynch theory in a way, that when you look at the stocks that are doing well, and particularly of late, you know, you see a lot of stocks that are the everyday stocks that you know about. Let's think about like a Starbucks, an Apple, a Priceline. But yes, we know about these stocks, and is it because we know about the stocks doing well that we know about them, or more so, is it because of their incessant advertising that they do? Now follow me here for a second. I was looking at a stock called Tempur-Pedic. You know this stock, right? The mattress company.
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking to myself, how is this stock doing well? Right? You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking, how is it as a mattress company that's very pricey doing well? Well, one of the things I realized, aside from maybe good management, et cetera, is that they're in your face all the time. They have a huge advertising budget. The same thing happened with Priceline. Same thing, obviously, with, let's say, McDonald's, you know, that's always on, too, and every 3 seconds. You know where McDonald's is, and you know all about McDonald's, but they have a lot of commercials. And I was wondering if the commercials, if the advertising is one of the reasons and one of the ways that has played so well for these companies, not only for their bottom line, but for recognition by investors to invest. What do you think about that?
Well, it's interesting. In fact, it's probably something you could probably screen for if you took enough time to do it. You know, one of the things that I have worked on is to see a high correlation between stock performance and customer sentiment surveys. In fact, there is a post that I did, I don't know, about a month ago, in which I proposed a theory that essentially we should be watching consumer ratings. A lot of them are published online. Many of them are accessible now, even for free. And you can determine which companies in particular sectors do extremely well. In fact, in that report that I provided, one of the interesting things to me, even though I don't shop there, was Nordstrom's being very highly ranked within the consumer sentiment surveys. And what you do find is that they tend to outperform their peers. And so there is something to be said about the consumer or the investor perception of that company and its related performance. And that's been proven by multiple studies. And so there is something to be said for that.
Well, I mean, just look at the obvious, which is Apple, which has overpriced. Not that they're not good. I love my Apple products. But they're priced comparatively, their MP3 players, their phones, they're overpriced compared to the other price of the market. I'm not saying overpriced from a quality standpoint. You look at their laptops. You could buy three Dells for the price of one Apple laptop. But their consumer, the sentiment about the company and the satisfaction with the company is probably no higher.
Absolutely. And you know, it's a well-run company. And I think that in Apple's case, you're talking about something that a lot of people in this country particularly starve for, and they want an American company that they can believe in, that they feel they can trust, and that's not evil. And frankly, Apple kind of fits that bill to a T and has been for a while now, you know, from its CEO, who is one of the, unquestionably is one of the most highly respected CEOs of this country, if not the world. And you have a constant stream of products that people will line up in droves to get for. I mean, look at the i4 phone that's coming out this week and how much demand there is for that. And we know there's a high correlation between a new product, demand, and stock price. And so that's very difficult to, trade in.
Yeah, no, and they basically shut down AT&T's system by the overwhelming demand for the there's a pre-order, by the way. That was, I talked about that a minute ago before we got you on, but it was a pre-order, and there's lines around the block.
That's
in
right.
Japan. All right, so tell me something. So one of the things I recommend is the stock screeners that you can use. And one of the things that is a problem that I always talk about with stock screeners, because, by the way, just to, I think you know this, you know, we start with screening. We have this quantifund to techno process, for lack of a better acronym or easy way to say it. We start with a quantitative process. And one of the things we do is we've looked at different screeners. And the main thing about the screener is that garbage in, garbage out, or better, another point is that bad data is worthless.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you look at somewhere and you do a screen and you find that the data that you're looking at may not be right. You miss one data point is wrong, and you may have inclusion of a stock that really shouldn't be. So who do you trust?
Well, I trust no one, frankly. In fact, I verify everything I can. It's, you know, people ask me, you know, why don't you update I have a proprietary system I share on the website called the Stock Screen Machine. And I get asked a lot of times, you know, why don't you update this thing weekly? Well, frankly, no one has that much time.
Right.
I mean, I have to go through and I have to re-verify all the data that's producing these screens. And that takes a tremendous amount of time. You know, not only do you deal with faulty data, but you deal with old and stale data. And if you're not comparing apples to apples, so to speak, you can run into some really erroneous type of results.
One of the things we've looked at is, I mean, there's a couple of stock screens we like and a few data sources. Thomson, you know, the question is, are they scrubbing the data, right? So you got to look at like a Thomson Reuters. A lot of the free ones you have to question, or one a lot of the less expensive ones you have to question. But if you look at a Thomson Reuters and a Bloomberg, we have the Bloomberg professional system. And, I mean, we have to take a leap of faith somewhere. You know, and we use theirs, and we find their data is scrubbed, and we know that we know their room of analysts that are looking at this data. Even so, we have found every once in a while a strange data point.
Right.
You know, but
and I have to. Yeah, I don't have the deep pockets that you probably do, Andrew. So I have to stick with things that are readily available to most people. The resource I use quite a bit for screening. It's provided by the American Association of Individual Investors, or AAII, Stock Investor Pro product.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the screens that I run, at least on a fundamental basis, are derived or used in that program. And even that, with weekly updates, they have lots of problems. And so you have to trust to verify and verify. You know, if you do it enough, to be honest with you, you probably have developed a pretty good keen eye to look for kind of erroneous type of readings. I mean, if you do it enough, you start to get a general sense of what to look for and which positions may be out of line when those screens are run. And
right.
So that's kind of, you know, it's one of those things like most things. You have to have experience and practice doing.
Yeah. And by the way, well, I may have deep pockets. I have extraordinarily short arms. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
With three kids, between two kids in college and one kid, sailing the Caribbean right now. It's a very, very short arms. All right. I know you do a lot of reading also, because obviously you're linking a lot of things on a regular basis and looking at things out there. And you look at some great sources and, what's your general view about the news these days? And let me just set this question up. There was a time, let's go back about a year, when kind of things were a mess, a real mess, more a different mess. And we saw that it seemed to me that the news was very biased towards positive headlines. And when you got to the underlying news, it was questionable that the headline matched the news item. Okay? I'm finding now quite the opposite. And I'll give you one example. Recently, we had the retail sales report come out that showed a negative 1.2% on overall retail sales. Well, that was the number. But, you know, that was definitely a bad number. There's no question about that. But when you kind of, like, went underneath and looked at the real number and saw there was almost a 10% drop in building and construction, and you looked at the rest of the numbers, they really weren't so bad. As a matter of fact, furniture, if you would have actually looked at that report and you would have seen that furniture manufacturers and furniture sales were up, if you looked at the stocks the next two or three days after that, they were on fire.
Right.
So, you know, do you find there's anything with the news that's a little bit out of whack these days, or has been forever? Or what do you think of the general concept of the news these days, mainstream media? Now, I'm not talking about the blogs now.
Well, within the mainstream media, I do believe that I'm finding the same thing you are, and I'm not saying that just to be agreeable. But there has been a definite trend recently of late to kind of spin the data in a certain way that is not particularly helpful. And in fact, it's funny that you even mentioned that retail sales report. My wife had coincidentally CNBC on TV after that report came out, and they had some expert on there, and he was on there, and I was walking through the room at the time, and he said, you know, this was not a bad report. If you take out half of the metrics in this report, well, we have a pretty good report on our hands. And I thought, wow, that's great.
Right, yeah.
You know, I could say that about just everything. You know, in fact, if you look at my trading history over the past year, if I could, you know, remove half of my losers, I would be a pretty good trader. So, you know, I mean, I just don't understand why everyone, and particularly the media, is bent on trying to spin it a certain way. In fact, you know, we'd all be better off if we just stopped doing that, took the data at face value, and moved on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really ridiculous. In fact, my own personal opinion is that investors in particular are being flooded with way too much information now, and it's causing a lot of investment paralysis. I see it within the the group that I mentor. I see it with the people I talk to online and a lot of people I know that are struggling with making sense of how the market could be so separated away from their own personal experiences as far as the economy and employment goes.
That's interesting you mentioned that, because you know there's a lot of different economies within an economy, and clearly there is the employment situation in the economy, right, which is, can't say anything good about it. It's just bad. And, you know, at the same time, we're looking at, you know, different parts of the economy. You know, like, let's take the Gulf Coast for a second, where we're seeing such a horrible situation. I read a really great story today, which showed, it's good and bad, I should say, whereas there's people who, let's say, would have a little restaurant, and they had to close it because there's no business, but they ended up selling rubber boots, and they're making a good amount of money from that. Great story about adaption, you know, great story about adaption. And this is going on and on and on, where maybe there was a place that was getting great vacationers, but now what they're doing in a motel, but now they're filling up with people that are cleaning and various public service individuals who are actually out there maybe testing and all of this. There's another company that would use their boats for fishing. Well, there's no fishing going on, but these boats are now being hired out to do a lot of cleanup and a lot of exploration, a lot about, you know, taking care of birds and the fish and things of that nature. So again, just a wonderful story of adaption. So you think, okay, there's a lot of jobs being lost in this one area, but how many jobs are being created just kind of in a different way?
Well, I think it's important. I mean, what you're saying there is an important part to kind of keep in mind whenever you evaluate economic data, and particularly even the market itself. I mean, the people who are trading successfully now are people who are readily adapting to the environment, and it's been changing quite a bit over the past couple of years, as you know, from high frequency trading and so forth. And so yeah, it's one of those things that I think that it is a mistake for most people to assume or make assumptions based on things they've done in the past, because the economy is much more mobile than it ever has been, much more global than it ever has been. And there are unique ramifications from it that we all have to consider.
Right. So is your favorite investment, or I shouldn't say even favorite, but your preferred, do you like ETFs or stocks better, or combination, or you know, it's kind of, or is it kind of like, I like every investment that makes me money? I mean, you know, how's that work for you?
Well, for me, you know, ETFs were not around when I started. So I was dealing with either index funds or dealing with trading individual stocks. And so that bias has pretty much kept with me because of that comfortability factor. But that said, I've been moving more and more to ETFs for trading vehicles and investment purposes. And I could see that if I were starting out right now, there'd be no way that I would ever invest or trade in a particular stock. I would only limit myself to ETFs, primarily because of their diversification, but also because I just believe that they're easier to manage and easier to deal with, right, for so many reasons.
Right. I mean, you don't have to worry about a BP situation per se in a broad-based ETF that, you know, all of a sudden one stock implodes on itself. You don't have to worry about a bad accounting circumstance. You don't have to worry about being short and Kramer running his mouth off and all of a sudden the stock going the other way on you. I mean, there's 100 different...
Yeah, it softens everything. Even the technical patterns are easier to identify, in my opinion. So, you know, in general, it's just easier to navigate, easier to profit from. And in fact, that's one of the things I try to stress to people who are struggling, is that, you know, if you're really going after the, it's okay to be involved in stocks, but for the most part, the ETFs are really where it's at and really where most smart people are dealing with. So, and I think that's going to be a trend that we're going to continue for this foreseeable period.
I hope that they stop with the three-time ETF, though. Those are kind of fun and great and all that. But there is still some, I think, in my opinion, additional volatility in the markets due to the ETFs. The ETF buys at the end of the day will push, you know, the SPY, as an example, will push the entire market because it's a holding of the 500 stocks. So, you know, you can move a whole market pretty easily right now if you have enough money and leverage it up using an SSO or an SDS or a BGU, something of that nature. Tell me about your mentoring program. You mentioned that a second ago. What's that all about?
Well, one comment just on what you said there. I personally believe we should put any type of new financial product, we should put on a hold right now, because I don't believe There is enough intelligence about the new products that are coming online. There's no regulation of what's happening. There's a huge curve that's being involved where the market is no longer fair for most individual people. So I think that it would be wise for everyone just to put everything on hold, to be able to study what's going on with the market and how it's being changed by these products before we let a single new instrument come on board.
Yeah, so hear, hear.
That's something I think that's widely shared by a lot of people I talk to, and I think it just only makes rational sense based on the environment we have. You know, we had a flash crash, as you know, just a few weeks ago, and there really has been very little understanding about what caused why, and until we figure out what's going on, we're really in a precarious situation. And in fact, what I try to do now as just a percentage of my capital is that I'm carrying very heavy cash positions because there is a risk there that we can't really put our arms around. And so, and I think a lot of people feel that way. So sorry to interrupt you, but
That's right. I mean, our portfolios right now at this exact time, we're a little bit more invested than we had been, but we still have about 35% cash.
Right.
And that's for one purpose. That is used as if I want to quickly put in a hedge on the short side, or if I want to rev the engine, you know,
exactly,
on the other side, and then it's out, you know. But that cash will stay there right now, you know, within a certain range. I mean, we were as low as 20% invested about 2.5 weeks ago, and we ramped it up very quickly, fortunately. And you know, at the same time, though, we still have only a 65% allocation because in individual stocks, your beta is much higher these days.
Right. I mean, in fact, one of the things that people are using with those leverage ETFs you spoke about before, and I understand your concern about them because I share them, I think they're okay as trading vehicles, but not much more beyond that. A lot of people are using them as for the ability to trade their size of the account, but in other words, just use them to fulfill the entire position. So in other words, if you had a 3-time leverage ETF, you would be, and you wanted to be long the market, well, then you'd have 30% of your, or 33% of your capital allocated to a leveraged ETF to allow the rest to be in a cash position.
Right.
And so that's kind of the way that a lot of traders are using those right now, and you can kind of understand in the environment that we're in.
Yeah, no, I agree. But tell me, the mentoring program, you know, you mentioned that a bit ago. What is that all about? How's that, I've heard and read about it on your site, but what does that mean?
Well, 2 years ago, after been doing blogging for a number of years and being somewhat frustrated with the ability to really reach people at a meaningful at a level of which I really think that was a meaningful difference, I decided that why not start a mentoring program? You know, I had two very important mentors in my past that really kind of helped show me how to trade, how to invest, and how to do what I do. And in a way of giving back, I decided to kind of take people under my wing. And from the amount of people that subscribe to the website and who express interest in participating, and every quarter we add 3 people to the group. It's kind of modeled, if you're familiar with the turtles concept, mm-hmm, as far as that goes, and it runs along the same lines. You know, we're basically a group of people that work together very closely on a daily basis, who not only assist each other, but as an entire group, we conference quite a bit. And it really is a very interesting and innovative and exciting experience that I've been involved with for the last 2 years, and it continues to grow, and it's something I'm really looking forward to continuing in the future.
That's great. That's good stuff, because that cross-current of information, you know, is good. You know, a lot of times you're faced with a piece of information that comes out, I bet, and you're saying, whether it's economic, whether it's whatever report, and you're like, but what does that really mean? You know what I mean? And then you kind of sometimes, right, you know, like me, I have people in my office, but, you know, you may say, I'd love to get an outside opinion on this because maybe I'm not seeing this right. Is this a good piece of information that this company just restructured their debt? Or is it, I mean, it kind of looks good to me, but is it, you know, how is that going to be taken? And maybe you want to get some outside, yeah.
Well, in fact, where it's most interesting is when you have differing analysis on the same particular topic and how much you can determine bias from that. You know, a lot of times people will, as you know, Andrew, they will look at facts and news, and they will try to only look for information that confirms their own positioning. And that's something we really try to avoid, to put up barriers against, because we never want to be in a position where we don't understand the other side of the trade better than ours.
I hear it. So now my understanding is you're living in Hawaii?
Or
you're
no.
Where are you living? Where are you at?
I am living in southern Utah in a small town called Cedar City.
Oh.
My wife works as a professor here. We moved 2 years ago from the cold state of Minnesota.
Oof.
And,
Oof.
And we've been living here for the last couple of years.
That's nice. I don't know why I thought you were from Hawaii for some reason. I don't know what... maybe I saw a picture of you with a Hawaiian shirt, and I kind of just extrapolated.
I think that's right. I've been there many times, and no, I love Hawaii, and we try to visit there often. But we like where we are. It's kind of a unique place for us. We're in a small town, just 50,000 people. It's a college town, and it's a really different environment, one that we like. So.
How great is it that from a small town, whether it's 50,000 people or 10 people, you are the town and your family, let's say. But how great is it that with the internet and with the availability of modern technology, of just the availability of communication systems, if you will, that you can do mentoring programs, or we can do these kind of podcasts. You know, my podcast, which is interesting, I have a huge following in Germany. I don't know how it got there. We didn't advertise in Germany, you know. We got this big... It's amazing. In Australia, we got a bunch of guys. Hey, Australia down under, by the way. Hello. Thanks for your emails recently. But no, really, we have this... It's amazing that, you know, this medium of... whether it's blogging or whether it's just a communication on the telephone or whether it's the podcasting, audio, video, it is amazing to me of how far it reaches, and the quality just bubbles up to the top. And that's, you know, a testament to yours as well, that I know a lot of people. And by the way, I know traders that, you know, pretty, I'll call them experienced traders that look at your information and subscribe to you. To gather a good piece of information to understand more about the market. So that's, you know, you should be very proud of that.
Well, thank you, Andrew. I try, and, you know, no one's perfect. There are a lot of things that I don't know and that I'm constantly learning, and there's a lot of things that I wish I did better at and had more time to do. But, you know, I think it's what you're saying there is revolutionized things. There are good things and bad things about that.
Yep.
Like I mentioned before, you know, I do believe that there's this information paralysis that's widespread among investors now. They're being fed information from all sorts, also in real time, and it really takes up a really strong filter to kind of put everything in perspective and make things actionable, and that's where the difficulty resides in most people.
Yeah.
Now.
And you know, the other problem is, and what we'll close on this, is that information, which is like trying to take a sip out of an open fire hydrant, the problem is that you don't know where there's a bias or where there is a conflict of interest. So you see that, for example, every single time we put out something on our website, there's a disclaimer on that says, hey, we may own positions in this. And the reason why we don't say we're long or short, because we can be long or short at any given time, right? So the substance of the article should tell you that if I'm talking about this in a good position, we're probably long the stock at this time. But I'll be honest with you, we could flip that position in 3 or 4 or a week or 2 weeks or a month, and you know, we don't want to get caught in that situation that you're reading something now and whatever. But we put a disclosure that we are in this position for anything that we talk about, whereas you don't find that everywhere. Everybody's an expert on Seeking Alpha and on a variety of these other, you know, mediums that people read. Who knows what their bias is, and if their whole process is just to write to push the stock.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that as an investor or trader, you have to make the assumption that everyone's trading their book and talking about their book to benefit their self. I mean, I think you can't think otherwise in this environment, you know, unless there's some sort of proper disclosure.
And it's allowed, let's be honest. You know, you look at CNBC, which we don't watch anymore, besides for announcement things and all that, to see kind of the quickies. But you know, if you watch like a CNBC and you watch any of these guys get on, I mean, they're talking their book left and right, and they're allowed to do it much more so than ever was before.
Oh, and that's why they're there. I mean, let's be honest.
Right.
Why would you spend time of your day to go on TV to talk your book? I don't quite understand the whole motivation behind that.
I hear you.
You know,
I hear you.
I don't get it. Never have, you know.
Yeah. So. Charles Kirk, you can find him at the Kirk Report. Is www.kirkreport.com with two K's, K-R-R-K, report.com. I want to thank you so much for joining us and for finally, you know, coming on board. I know that you've been very busy, lots of things going on, that, you know, there, and that We'll make sure, I'll tell my listeners to check out what you have to write. Maybe they'll find some pearls of wisdom for some of the things that you're doing. And who knows, maybe they'll be interested in your mentoring program as well. Thanks a lot for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, buddy.
Well, thank you, Andrew. And hopefully I have an alternative motive. Hopefully you'll come on board and we'll do a strategy session or something for an hour or so when you have some time.
That would be great. That would be great.
It would be great. So thank you.
We will do that. I will tell you that I'm available in the same time period with you. So call me in a year and a half.
Okay, sounds good.
No, I'm kidding. We'll do it sooner than that. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too.
That's great. I mean, Charles Kirk has some great following. I found that kind of refreshing. And a guy who speaks how it is. That was really nice to hear. And other than that, I want to let you know that, of course, if you want to pick up my book, The Disciplined Investor, it's over at Amazon. Pretty cheap right now, but you want to know more about technical analysis or fundamental analysis and kind of things that we talk about here, that's where you find it. Over at The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, that's at Amazon.com. You could find that. And other than that, of course, if you're interested in kind of making a little bit of money, hopefully, or hedging your money, or at least investing at this time, you can check out the 14-minute virtual tour for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. Don't be scared. You can just check it out for free, see what's going on, see if you like what we're talking about. $50,000 minimum to invest, and that's a lot less. We set up the special account strategy because it's a lot less than our traditional $500,000 minimum for our global allocations. But nonetheless, this is available. It is something you'll really enjoy because the transparency is something you've never seen before. Trust me on this. You get regular updates. You're in communication with what your portfolio looks like at all times, and something that's just not out there these days. So we pioneered this a couple of years back, and people are just loving it. So if you're looking for something different, and maybe it's about time with these markets being as volatile as they are, check out the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a link in the show notes, and you can check that out. Other than that, we're going to kind of call it a day, and thank you for joining us. I hope you have a prosperous week. Happy Father's Day to everybody who is celebrating that, and we look forward to seeing you again next week for a great episode. Send me emails to ask any questions. We'll try to answer a few next week at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.